Blog Talk Radio.
Brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the Ooze.
Well, it's like you got four big dicks in the room, so who's gonna fucking slap this shit down first?
Disciple it basically, and then focus on the problem at hand. You're not dealing with the emotion, you're dealing with the issue.
Wish I had some big long-winded speech to all pack this up today for you gentlemen, but unfortunately I'm somewhat bankrupt.
Now onto our show.
All right, thanks for tuning in, folks. I'm Vicino. This is Dark Fool on the line with me. Dark Fool, how you doing?
Pretty good, man. How about yourself?
I'm actually doing excellent, man. I mean, not too bad. It's a very quiet Black Friday here at the fireworks store, so I've got plenty of time to kick back and fucking, talk about all the good stuff that we got coming on. So you're here today for a couple of reasons, actually. Reason number one is Jason King's unable to make a long-term commitment to being the co-host of the Ooze. And, he and you both threw your name in the hat. So I'd like to give you a spin to, see how you do. And it's possible you could be the permanent Saturday co-host. So that's the first reason. The second reason, and probably in my mind the most important reason, is you've recently been doing some really in-depth research on a very fascinating subject, and as a consequence, you're writing a book about it. Am I correct?
That is correct, sir. And the
awesome.
Book is going to be called Way of the Dionysian. And what I'm basically doing within... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Please continue. I'm sorry.
No worries. The book is called Way of the Dionysian, and what I am doing is basing this work. Now, I want to address something that came up before in conversation with Jason King. He was making a reference to, he thought that the direction I was going with the book was with the classical Greek gods, Dionysianism based off of Dionysus, and that's actually not the direction. I'm taking it more from the inspired text of The Birth of Tragedy by Nietzsche and expanding upon those concepts and other concepts that were introduced after, long after, the Greek period.
Right.
So, I'm basically forming, to put it in a nutshell, I'm forming my own path within the left-hand path on various concepts.
Okay, so what exactly is Dionysianism?
Well, Dionysianism, taken, like I said, from the Nietzschean concept, is more of a direction in wholeness. There's a dichotomy, like wholeness versus individuation, which has actually been explored within the left-hand path, the left-hand path versus the right-hand path, the collective versus the individual. And a similar concept arises within Apollonianism and Dionysianism, which is very interesting because Dionysianism has to do with a certain type of wholeness, a wholeness that could be intuited, if that makes any sense.
I think I'm getting the gist of it, but is there, can you put it in a little bit of a simpler explanation?
Basically, within drawing upon literary concepts like the Apollonian and Dionysian, we see their various themes. These concepts are actually a means to an end in and of itself, leading to what I would call the zero current. For example, you have very hard to describe.
The zero current. What is it? Is it the same thing that Jason might call ex nihilo?
Sort of. To give you another example of that, these various concepts like what was it, like the Euros. There's two types that I'm going to be working with primarily, Apollonian Dionysian, obviously the first one. And the second one that I'm bringing up is the Euros and Thanatos, which leads to the zero current, like the life drive and the death drive. So while there is one drive, you know, while there's one drive going in one direction and another drive going another direction, it appears at first that way, but it actually is the same drive working both directions.
Okay, so it's positive and negative poles in the same current?
Yes, exactly. Positive and negative poles, but leading towards a balance to work everything out.
Okay, so it's the extreme gray area in the middle, then, or both.
Absolutely.
So what I'm gathering then is, rather than picturing this like little line diagram of there being a line with two arrows on each point at the end, the arrows would actually be directly in the center.
Yes, absolutely. Each leading back into the other.
Interesting. Okay. Now, how does this relate directly to Satanism?
Well, see, that's the thing. That's the tricky part of it. It doesn't exactly... It relates to Satanism in as much as, for example, there are certain dichotomies within Satanism that show, you know, for example, Satan, dark, chthonic, and, you know, Luciferian, light, wisdom. Now there's, you know, like a light and dark dichotomy within there. There's obviously one that leads into the other, or not necessarily one versus the other, but it definitely has that sort of light and dark, being Apollonian being light and Dionysian being dark, being not necessarily dark. There's actually, that's the funny thing about the Dionysian aspect, is that it's not exactly dark. There's varying degrees within it. Do you understand?
Yeah, different shades of gray. I understand.
Okay.
All right, so, I'm just trying to figure this out here, because, you know, like I said, I really wanted to kind of just keep a blank slate, and I'm just going to pretend like I haven't read anything by Nietzsche. I really want to know what it is that resonates so much with this particular ideology in you.
Well, within me, and I'm going to explain a lot of this in the preface of the book, I've always been drawn towards the fool. You know, the image of the fool, there's something about it that has always appealed and always called out to me. And I've always wondered what that was. Yet at the same time, as I've gone through my experience within the left-hand path, I've always been drawn towards satanic concepts and satanic themes. You know, starting out with, of course, Anton LaVey's, you know, Here and Now, Carnal Delights, Carnal Pleasure, which, by the way, relates a bit to Dionysianism. But I've always been drawn towards these two themes, and I've wondered, how does one reconcile with the other? And, you know, it can relate with the satanic / Luciferian paradigm, you know, elements of light and dark, wisdom and knowledge, and, you know, the higher and lower nature of man. But I've always wondered how these two worlds kind of coincided. And then as I've grown and as I've gone through different you know, looked at different works like Nietzsche's, looked at different works like Carl Jung, Sigmund Freud, I started to see how all, and then of course getting into Aleister Crowley and, you know, the hidden aspects of the fool and where it plays its part in tarot, all of these things just started to come together. And I saw correlations, like I said, like the satanic, Luciferian, Apollonian, and Dionysian, kind of coinciding and seeing similarities. There's obvious differences, of course, but I've seen these two worlds kind of come together.
All right. And now I'm curious. You stated prior that, you know, this was kind of like a two-pole thing, and the fool itself, well, which end of the spectrum is it going to be more relative to? I I don't know. Well, is my question clear? Because it might not be.
Actually, I'm not quite clear on the question.
All right. My question is the Fool more related to Apollo, or is it more related to Dionysus?
The Fool is more related to Dionysus. But here's the catch. Here's the interesting point of it. The literary dichotomy that I'm drawing upon, Apollonian and Dionysian, the Apollonian serves a purpose. Okay, first of all, let me clarify something before I even go further with that. The Apollonian is, within the context of like the Nietzschean, which I'm drawing upon, is more like the plastic arts, the detached observer, whereas the Dionysian is more like the musical arts, and it is like the frenzied worship, etc., you know, more the musical, more the intuited. So the detached observer aspect plays a role within it as a balancing factor. Because if you go completely Dionysian, you're going into complete chaos and you could just spin out of control. So utilizing that portion within the dichotomy sets a balance.
Okay, that's pretty reasonable. Now, earlier you stated that there was a direct correlation to, I'm trying to remember the words you used exactly, but I interpret it as being things of the carnal, things of the flesh. And
yes.
Dionysian, damn it. Whatever we're talking about.
I forgot already. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, the things of the flesh, you know, things to be enjoyed and excess within Dionysianism. Now, those things are good insofar as, you know, life is meant to be enjoyed, and it's like a release, you know what I mean, a release of tension. That's another theme that's going to come up in the book a lot, is tension and release and how it relates to music, to arts, and, of course, tension and release being related to the adversarial current.
Right. Now, for just a moment there while you were saying that, I kind of, in my mind, kind of flashed to the chapter in the Satanic Bible on indulgence without compulsory.
Yes, and that's correct.
So I can see a parallel right there with Satanism. Are there other concepts like that that directly tie into it that you've examined, or is this still too early in your work to really hone anything out?
Well, yeah, that is true. That it is still pretty early, but I would say that you definitely hit one on the nail right there, a nail on the head with that. And the other aspect, like I said, light and dark. Another one is like detached versus attached, and, you know, observing as opposed to participating in. And, yeah, these things definitely correlate with one another.
Okay. Now, you mentioned music in a couple of different aspects. You know, I know you're very interested in music. I'm curious, is this book going to be focused heavily on the relation of music and the arts within this paradigm, or are you moving more towards a magical understanding or something of enlightenment?
Both, as a matter of fact. The music in relation to the arts and its relation to adversarial, you know, the adversarial current in relation to how these have already been tapped into by, like, shamans, for example, reaching a shamanic state of consciousness through dancing and through frenzied action. But there's also the opposite of that, you know, yogis and Buddhists who have reached a state of enlightenment through deep meditation and detachment. So, I mean, these are two poles that kind of, these are two things that kind of reach the same end, but utilizing different techniques. So, like I said, when I bring up the Apollonian within this dichotomy, it's more of you know, a detachment to balance things out. Because if you go completely Dionysian, you run the risk of going chthonic, and that is a chapter in and of itself.
That's a chapter in and of itself. All right, a couple of things that I'm wanting to kind of go back and touch on. I'm sorry, I'm just thinking of these things as we're talking about this. So
that's great. That's great.
The reference to the two poles, is this ideology going to be a consistent dualism? Is it start from a dualistic perspective and then continue to fraction, or is there, you know, what else is going on there?
That's a very good question, and I would say that it starts out with dualism, but it branches out into like a third pole.
A third pole. And how would you describe this third pole?
Well, that's just the thing. That third pole can't exactly be described. You know, it can be alluded to, but it can't exactly be described. But that is kind of the direction that I'm going with when I talk about the zero current. It's kind of that balancing, a living balancing factor, if you will.
Okay, just a little side note. There was recently a video done by my good friend Jason Sorrell where he discusses the concept of trichotomy. I couldn't think of the damn word for a minute there. The trichotomy of what he describes is that you have the positive, the negative, and then you have the third pole, which is in itself really the acting energy that moves between the two. For instance, if you had a negative charge on the ground and a positive charge in the clouds, or vice versa, you the lightning bolt that transmits between them is actually the third pole. It's the third leg in the trilogy, so to speak. Now I'm curious, is it this idea any relation to what you're talking about?
Actually, that's very close, very closely related to what I'm talking about. But this third pole kind of keeps everything in motion. You know, I wouldn't look at it so much as you know, these charges that come together in fire. I would look at them as something that is constantly moving. You know, like positive, you know, protons, electrons, and neutrons.
Okay. Now the next thing I actually want to go back to and talk about some more is the fool, the notion of the fool, because most people have a pretty misguided understanding of what a fool actually is or can be. Would you like to describe some of the characteristics of a fool?
I certainly would, and I would also like to mention that I take, like I said, a lot of people assume that I'm taking one direction when I'm actually taking a completely new one. There's the fool, and then there is the dark fool. So I will start out by saying that the fool is basically, like, within the context of the tarot, it is the beginning and the end, you know, within the whole spiritual journey. And a fool, normally lighthearted, normally, you know, relies on his inner strength, you know, doesn't have so much, you know, lives simply. The dark fool, however, is a fool that has gone, what I would relate to within these old concepts, like these Greek concepts, somebody who has made a fatal misstep and has learned, you know, has gone through this path and has come back full circle to where he once was. And the question then arises, is he going to make the same mistake, or is he going to rise above the mistake that he had made? Is he going to redeem himself, so to speak? So, in other words, to answer your question, I would say like a regular fool would just be like the fool of the tarot, lighthearted, representing spring, representing, I guess, the innocence, so to speak, before going down this journey. But the dark fool is actually somebody who was innocent at one point, but lost it and went a completely chthonic direction.
Now, the Dark Fool then relates to the Trickster. We've had multiple conversations off the air and whatever between me and you, and I'm curious to know now how this fits into it.
Ah, excellent, excellent question. The Trickster is actually, I would say it is one, the Trickster is one who has actually escaped the cycle, has actually mastered it, and has come back to bring somebody else through the path in order for them to learn and understand. And I would actually equate the Trickster aspect with the Apollonian, somebody who has become detached. But, you know, went through the experience but became detached.
Awesome. So far, it sounds like great stuff. Now, how long do you think you'll actually be releasing this book?
I haven't set a time limit yet, but I am working diligently every chance I get. The way I work, just so everybody knows out there, when I get a project in my mind, I get tunnel vision, you know, like a bull to a red flag. I just go for it every chance I get. And I haven't set a date yet, but it's coming. And Beast, you will be the first one to know.
Awesome. I'd be very happy to know that, man. I've been really excited that you're actually kind of digging your feet in and, you know, getting dirty instead of hanging on the sidelines studying. So it's nice to see you actually manifesting, I guess is what I'm saying.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I really appreciate that, and I appreciate the positive feedback that you've given me, that Jason King has given me, that Zach has given me. You guys have been great. And, you know, trial by fire, too. If you guys have any questions, you want to tear it up, tear it apart, feel free to call in. I am always open to suggestions.
Now, I'm curious, beyond just the stories that you're drawing from, is there more Nietzsche-esque influence in this Dionysianism?
Nietzsche really, the heart and soul of what Nietzsche presented was in The Birth of Tragedy, but I would say that it starts with that, but it expands upon that and it goes outside because, well, Nietzsche was great. He did have his faults within certain ideologies, the number one being the Übermensch. But like I said, there's pretty much not going to be too much Nietzschean beyond that. There will be, however, similarities, like the Apollonian, the Dionysian is going to be similar to the Eros and Thanatos drives, and I'm going to show how the two correlate and how they correlate with the Trickster and the Fool, the Zero Current, and all that.
Excellent. Well, what I'd like to actually do now, if you don't mind, Fool, is I'd like to open up the phone lines for people to call in and ask you questions, because I'm sure there's probably a million of them that I haven't thought of that people want answered. So if you're good with that, we'll go ahead and throw out the call-in number.
Absolutely. Bring it on.
All right. So the call-in number is 347-989-1371. You got questions, rather than typing them in text, why don't you pick up the phone, call, and ask him so I'm not acting as a third party here. In the meantime, I've got to say I'm really excited. I'm curious because, to me, I see a direct relation between the concept, or at least what I've envisioned the concept of the devil to be as being more of a trickster type aspect. I view the devil, any devil, as, you know, kind of like a minor deity who's, you know, out there just creating chaos and mayhem, you know, by little, you know, paths and little agreements. So I'm really interested to see how you're going to work all this out. But we do have our first caller here, so let me take them. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Nope, no caller. Gone. It was all ones, and then they dropped.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I mean, what do you think of that? Because, like I said, I've always just kind of had this notion that, that a devil was
okay.
more of a mischievous entity than.
Well, there's obviously, yeah, there's a mischievous edge to it, but there's also one who is a mastermind and who knows what he's doing. And, you know, I would say within most recent years, the most perfect example I've seen thus far of that sort of thing coming out within the arts, more specifically within movies, has been the Joker, has been Heath Ledger's portrayal of somebody who pretends that they don't know what's going on when, in fact, they're masterminding the entire thing.
Right. Well, that's absolutely what I was even thinking of as I was making that statement, and why I brought that up, because in my mind that's a direct correlation with what a devil actually is.
Yes, absolutely. But, and in fact, one of the concepts I'll be bringing up within the book is, in fact, another correlation that corresponds with Satanism, at least in the LaVeyan sense, is. One way to throw off psychic vampires, if you'll recall, was LaVey brought up the concept of playing dumb at certain intervals, at certain points. And one concept that I'm bringing within this book is playing dumb as a way of concealment. And if you look at the Heath Ledger example, he keeps saying, you know, like, hey, I'm a dog chasing cars, or, you know, I'm crazy. No, I'm not crazy. You know, he just keeps playing dumb, like he doesn't know what's going on, when in fact, secretly, he knows what's going on from, you know, before it even started.
Right, he pushed the first pawn forward.
Yes, exactly.
That's a really great analogy for something that I'm really looking forward to you expounding on. I'm kind of curious now, do you see this trickster kind of ideology is being separate from the fool, or is this just a darker kind of, mischievous entity?
Well, I would see the fool itself is somebody who is going through. One of the main concepts I want to draw upon, I will bring up to right now, is, let me get the word for it. Anagnorisis. Hold on, I'm getting my.
Oh, that's no problem. While you're doing that, I'm going to bring Michael Joaquin on the air, okay?
All right,
Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good, Mr. Joaquin.
Hey, Dog Fool. What's going on?
Not much, man. How you doing, brother?
Excellent. I'm very happy with your work, Dog Fool. Very happy. I'm very excited for you as well. So it's like Beast was saying, you know, it's the whole thing about, you know, Satanism, it's all good to sit there and be like an armchair Satanist, but the fact is you're manifesting something. So that's worthy of, you know, a lot of respect and a good pat on the back, my friend. So I'm really happy with all that stuff, you know.
Thank you, my friend.
It's okay. I'm really genuinely impressed with your theory, to be honest with you. It's something I find really interesting. I was going to speak about something specifically, which is related to, you talk about the zero current, and there's two things that I wanted to ask. The first thing is that you use the example of lightning, you know, so you have two opposing forces, and then obviously you have the third pole, which is the lightning effect. Is that something that you think you can influence in regards to the charge on either side?
Well, like I said, those would be, that's very close to what it is I'm describing. The zero current in and of itself, what I would describe as something that's utilizing both the positive and negative spectrums in a
right.
continuous cycle. So it wouldn't exactly be, you know, lightning, boom, and then it ends. It would just be the thing that continues to keep going and keep cycling and keep going within, like keep interceding within our world and then drawing back out of our world and in our world and back out. Kind of like how space itself expands and contracts.
Right. Yeah, I see where you're coming from with that one. The other thing as well, it's interesting that you mentioned zero. Obviously, zero is the number of the fool in the tarot.
Right.
With your book, are you kind of looking into like the numerical properties of zero? And
I am, and thanks to you, my friend. from the recommendations that you gave me, I'm looking further into that aspect. See, everything that I've been bringing up at this point has been at least from a right-brained perspective, mm-hmm. you know, concepts and mm-hmm. theories and all that. But when you get into the realm of mathematics, it adds a more of a solidified state. So I am definitely, thanks to you, I'm going to give you mad props in my book. I'm looking in that direction.
Thank you. Because the reason why I bring it up is because if you have this singularity of zero, when you start breaking down zero, it throws out random. It's like with the universe. I see zero as completeness rather than, because it's interesting. For me, it's like two opposing things. The actual number zero I see as completeness. That's heavily referenced. Yeah, it's heavily referenced in, for example, the Book of Law by Aleister Crowley. But also in mathematics as well. When you start breaking down zero, it actually spits out a lot of numbers. And it gets.
And how about binary?
Well, yeah, and then you get to a point where zero actually can't have rules applied to it. So is it a case that with your current, you know, you were saying before how you can't define this third element. Do you think maybe that's because you've broken zero down, this zero current down, and it's something which you can't define? Because I would see that as another correlation to mathematics, because the same thing happens within mathematics.
That's absolutely correct. That's why it cannot be defined. That's why I can't exactly describe this third pole. This, you know, I can allude towards the zero current, but I can't exactly pin it down precisely.
Because I think what actually is, I mean, my take on it is the fact that you're not actually using the zero current in a standard form of using something. You're actually breaking it down to utilize the components coming out of it rather than seeing it as a complete thing, if you know what I mean. Is that right? Or am I way off?
You're close. I mean, what I'm doing is I'm trying to bring it to the, well, I'm trying to allude towards it without breaking it down. You get what I mean? I'm
sure.
Trying to bring it forward without breaking it down, because you can't. I mean, it's one of these things, like I said, it's going to be a continuous cycle that utilizes both negative and positive spectrums. And that's actually where it gets very interesting, because as it does that, it dissolves certain things, like what we see as contradictions of light and dark. What we see as contradictions of the right-hand path within the left and the left-hand path. That's why the Dionysian state is a state of wholeness. You know, it's like the collective and the individual, not the collective versus the individual.
Do you think it's kind of like an evolution from, like, the way I see what you're doing, which I think is really interesting, do you think it's almost like taking the path and right-hand path, smashing them together, and then taking kind of that and making it into something else, almost kind of observing it from a different perspective?
Yep.
Like, above that, you know, so like you're actually going beyond the left hand right hand path to create something
which is coming up.
Is that right? Yeah,
that is absolutely right.
It almost
go ahead, ask your question.
It almost kind of reminds me of an element of nihilism where, well, obviously you have different interpretations of nihilism. You know, one of the interpretations could be that we're not actually sure of what reality is, so we can't really define it. And I think that could be an element which is really intrinsic to this theory that you've kind of, that you're developing and kind of putting out there. Because it's something I follow myself. It's something which I kind of follow myself.
You're very, very close. Nihilism is explained. There is, it's like, okay, nihilism is utilized as a tool, so to speak. In fact, one nickname, I was joking to myself one day. I was saying, the way of the Dionysian, otherwise known as the way of the satanic fanatic, you know?
Right.
It's like you've got people that have this strong life drive, this strong sense of purpose, like this Euros drive, so to speak.
Sure.
And then they also have this death drive, this Thanatos drive to go inside a cafe and just, like, light themselves up like a bomb, you know what I mean, just go off, you know what I mean, because they believe in something so strongly. It's taken that that Apollonian and Dionysian force, that Dionysian force more specifically, and it is utilizing a destructive nature for a creative end.
So my question, my last question, because I don't want to take up all your time, and I really appreciate you for having me on, I appreciate that, but are you going to be labeling this Dionysian path as a satanic philosophy? Or are you going to be laying something new?
As a matter of fact, I'm glad you asked that question. Great questions, Michael. The way I'm going to do it is this. I'm going to leave the option open to the reader to say, because you can be a Dionysian and you can be a Satanist and you can be anything you want within the left-hand path, or you can be a straight Dionysian. So the way I'm going to do it, though, I've thought about this for a long time, and the way I'm going to do it is when the book finally comes out, I'm not going to renounce Satanism because, you know, Satanism will always be close to me. I will not throw the baby out with the bathwater, but when the book is out, I am a Dionysian.
Do you think then, that was my last question. I've got one more because of what you said. Do you not think, though, that by saying that the options are open, you may be kind of, I don't know, it might be interpreted as kind of, not a weak start, like standpoint, but maybe like, I think some people might want confirmation, you know, whether it is, say, like a satanic, maybe it's a case of not saying whether it's Satanism or not, but you, maybe it'd be a case of having
Dionysianism.
Right, Dionysianism. Maybe it's a case of labeling that as a new principle rather than actually labeling it as Satanism itself. So you have it as an element of something where it's not actually encompassing it as a whole.
That's an excellent point. But there is one other thing to consider, and that is the fact that Satanism is already well known and well established, whereas Dionysianism is something that's still in its infancy.
Yeah.
And so to kind of tack it along at this point, would say like, okay, I'm a Dionysian, I'm a Satanist, etc. A lot of people ask, well, what's a Dionysian? Well, I mean, I'm definitely, just the point that I'm making is that I'm going to make it a path within the left-hand path that goes beyond the left-hand path.
Don't you see that as a paradox?
Yes, I do.
So how can, because the way I see it, I know this sounds really like a strange thing to say, but the way I see it is you're taking elements, two opposing elements, to create a third thing. So if you have something which is a third thing, how can you confine it to either left or right hand path if it's its own thing? Or is it a case of you're trying to align it with something to give you exposure? Is that more the direction you're going in?
No. It's more of the fact that, see, here's the thing about the left-hand path that I got to be completely honest with you. The left-hand path has always been more free in many areas. The right-hand path has been very much too constrictive with its rules, with its regulations. You must do this. You must bow this many times towards the sun. The left-hand path is like, no, do what thou wilt.
Right.
And with that do what thou wilt mentality comes a certain freedom for things to grow.
Right.
In fact, the do what thou wilt quote came from Aleister Crowley, from Thelema, and Thelema itself was not exactly left-hand path, and it wasn't exactly right-hand path.
So would you say that it has a Thelemanistic element to it?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm increasingly more interested in what you have to say, though, Paul. I was interested before, but I think it's going to border on obsessive-compulsive. And when is this book going to come out, bud? Because I'm itching to get it.
Well, you guys are my balancing factors. You guys are the ones that are there to prod me and say, when is it coming out? And I'm working on it diligently. I have no date at this time, but I am working as hard as I can on the book because I have tunnel vision when it comes to my projects.
Right. Okay, well, I'm going to leave it there because I've taken up more than enough of your time. And I just want to say thank you to Beast, King, everybody that's been really cool and having me on you. Thank you as well, Darkfall. And it's been a real pleasure. And I'm really looking forward to obviously looking into the work a little bit deeper. If you need any help in regards to the mathematical side of it, just give me a shout and I can give you some good resources.
Absolutely, man. We'll be in touch.
No worries at all, buddy. You take care of yourself.
You too.
Thanks, Paul. Take care, B.
You too, man. Excellent. So what I'm trying to figure out, because you know, when you think in terms of, you know, right-hand, left-hand path, and then you think of what you're describing as being something that's plowing right down the middle, does that then become a neutral understanding, or is it more of an active understanding?
I would say it's more of an active understanding in a sense, because, I mean, it's basically... Okay, when we discuss the left-hand path, we have already distinctions on what sets the left-hand path apart. What are characteristics of the left-hand path? But at the same time, there are certain things within the right-hand path that are beneficial, but, like I said, the right-hand path is too strict and too rigid and doesn't allow too much growth. So what I'm doing with this is kind of bringing two things together and dissolving them, which, by the way, has to do with the Dionysian concept, the concept of going back and returning to wholeness, and kind of taking that to the next level.
Okay, all right. Real quick here, DF, what I'm going to do, man, there's been some like massive questions being fired into the chat room, so I'm just going to go ahead and read them off here, at least the ones that pique my interest as well. Nagashiva would like to know the relation of the Dark Fool to the Devil in Tarot. If there is one, or if you see one, how it works out.
Okay. Excellent question, and let me pull something up really quick. I apologize. Give me one moment.
That's no problem. I know you've got all your notes and everything all tucked away, so... in the meantime, I think we're going to probably stay on the tarot topic for a little bit here.
Absolutely.
So,
okay, the one word that I was looking for earlier that I have now, anagnorisis, if I pronounce that correct, coined by Aristotle, and it's the protagonist in tragedy that undergoes a process of recognition in which they see their own nature and destiny more clearly than before. Mostly through tragedy, like, say, for example, Oedipus Rex. He had harmatia. He had a fatal misstep that took him down this dark path in which he realized finally at the end himself. It's that the fool is... That anagnorisis is described as a coming into wisdom. The fool is coming into wisdom through tragedy, through that misstep. And the trickster aspect is one who is already gone through that, knows it, and has transcended it, and is manipulating it from the sidelines. So,
okay.
For example, a parallel would be Lucifer falling and becoming Satan, and then coming into the Garden of Eden and manipulating from the sidelines. That's one example I can think of right off the bat.
Okay, cool. Hold on just 1 second. We got a caller down the line. Caller.
Hey. Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey.
Who's this?
Hey. Hey, this is Zach. How you doing? Dark Fool.
Hey, what's up, Zach?
How you doing? I don't mean to interrupt your show. I'm not going to pretend like I know what you guys are even talking about. I listened to like 10 minutes. But I want to ask you something about the Dark Fool persona, the hat and everything. Is that more of a tarot thing?
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Is it? Okay, cool. I was wondering that. I never actually had a chance to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
And,
are you going to put your ideas down on YouTube for us, for those who are illiterate?
Oh, yeah, I'll do more YouTube videos on these concepts that I'm introducing, and I'll do my best to be more thorough and more concise and hopefully more geared towards the layman, so to speak.
Oh, cool. Actually, I just more want to call and say hi and just ask you that question right now. Now I'm going to go. So
okay.
Your show. All right.
Bye. Take care, Zach.
All right. Be good, man. All right. The next question that kind of caught my eye here in the chat room was the Dark Fool's relation to the Journey of the Fool Trump cycle. Do you have speculation on that?
The Trumps, as in the coins, the... are you talking about the Lesser Arcana or the Major Arcana?
I believe that's a Major Arcana.
The Trumps are the Major Arcana, excuse me.
Right.
Well, that's actually the thing. It's that the fool is, you know, obviously the fool's journey through life. That's the most traditional aspect of it, going from zero and returning all the way, what was it, to 21, I believe, 22 cards, and then returning back to zero. The dark fool's a bit different in the sense that the journey starts with not so much with a, how should I say this? It doesn't start so much with lightheartedness. It starts with darkness dragging you down. You know, lightheartedness is like, you know, it's tragedy, but it's a different approach to tragedy. For example, you know, the fool is following, the traditional is the fool following the butterfly off of the cliff. And, you know, because he's distracted by something, he wants to catch it, hold it, what have you. The other one focuses more on the fatal misstep, on more of the pride. You know, there's the negative aspects which drags one down into this journey. So it's not so innocent, so to speak.
Okay. Hang on one second. Yeah, it looks like either Zach is calling back in or I didn't hang up on him. So let's see what's going on. Zach? Zach?
Hello?
Laybush. Okay. Nope. All right, he just apparently must have, like, pocket dialed us. So.
Yeah, butt dialed.
Either that or maybe he's just getting a little bit of revenge in and he's going to take up a little bit of your show.
Ah, he's really that upset about it, huh?
No, I doubt he is at all, man, but it's still funny. I see like comments made by that character, Tim is Hardcore, where he's constantly trying to, it's like he's trying to manipulate some kind of conflict between you and Zach that doesn't really exist when he's talking about it. It's just the way that I interpret it, which I don't expect anything less from somebody who claims one thing but hangs out with all the people on the other side of the room, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's why Tim is the man, dude. You know, he's like, at least say what you will about Tim, at least he's not willing, you know, in his own words, to go into the lion's den. You know, a lot of people, that's the other thing you got to consider about Christ, too, is that Christ hung out with prostitutes, he hung out with tax collectors, and, you know, Tim's doing the same thing. So I give him, you know, mad props for just coming in and saying hello and just saying, you know, starting a dialogue. You know,
right.
not in a confrontation, not to confront, but to, you know, just shoot the shit, so to speak. But yeah, that would be funny if Zach is just planning his revenge this whole time. Anyways,
yeah,
everybody there? Oh, okay.
Yeah, everybody's here, man. I'm just kind of chuckling because Zach's putting up his explanation of what was up right now. He was actually just listening into the show, but he stepped away for a minute for, relief, and I guess that's when I flipped over or whatever, so it's just kind of comical. Now, I'm really kind of excited about not only this, but if you're, if you're willing to take over JK's spot since he can't make a permanent commitment to the show, then it'd be great to have you on there. So.
Yeah, you know what? I will, if you ask, I'll be there, dude. I'm going to do my best to make, obviously I can't make the Fridays one. So Zach, if you're listening, the Friday slots are open because I can't take it because I'm at work. So you can,
yeah,
you
actually,
can have
Zach's
that.
Already got, He's already called dibs on the Friday shows, man. It's you know, more like his 10 o'clock in the morning, if you know what I mean.
Right, so. Right. Cool, man. So you got your spot. You can plug your website, you know, scratch yourself on camera or on the air, whatever. Go off on a tentacle rant.
Right. So And above and beyond all of this, does anybody else have, oh, wait a minute. Actually, yeah. Michael Joaquin would like to know how the fool as a character with an element of obliviousness can be integrated into the D-path.
Ah. Well, the oblivious aspects, everybody goes through. Everybody, like, nobody is born knowing everything. So, obviously, that that one word I said, anagnorisis, I can never pronounce it. I can't even pronounce my own words. What the fuck? Yeah, anagnorisis, the coming into knowledge. That applies to everybody. But the more darker aspect of that is more of where pride is concerned, where one thinks that one knows everything. And that's another correlation within Satanism and the left-hand path is over, you know, counterproductive pride, where one believes. In fact, I believe even Gurdjieff talks about that, where one imagines, you know, one knows, one
right.
thinks that one is one thing and then they turn out to be another thing. That's actually pride playing its part. And that's the one of the greatest harmachias that we can imagine, and that has been seen in plays like Oedipus Rex. So that the darker aspects, the dark fool, is somebody who thought they knew and overstepped and went down this path, and things come around full circle. Now, are they going to make the same mistake based on what they've learned? Out of habit, out of, you know, their carnal instincts or what have you, or are they going to actually take a step back, which I would attribute to the Apollonian, you know, being the detached observer within the Nietzschean philosophy. Are they going to detach, take a step back, and not do it again? Are they going to, and once they take that step, that opposite step, then they become the trickster.
This has all really been interesting. I'm sorry I haven't had better questions for you, man. I mean, I really, honestly, you know, I've been interested to hear what you formulate, and our conversations always seem so incomplete. I haven't drawn any conclusions myself mentally, so. But I really think you
That's
got
a
bunch of good ideas going, man.
Thank you. Thank you. And I take pride in knowing that I stumped Beast.
Yeah, there's definitely there's a lot of interesting things here, and it's not something that I'm very heavy on, Greek philosophy or not Greek philosophy, but Greek mythology is always kind of just been one of those things that I enjoyed watching stuff on and reading stuff on, but never really got too heavy into the symbolism of it. It just seemed overly simplified to me, so...
Right, and that's the thing, is that I've always enjoyed, like, as a kid, I've enjoyed Greek myths, I've enjoyed, you know, different mythologies, but the Greek myths, what I find fascinating about them is how they've been expanded upon over the years and how they've been integrated within our culture and our society and within, you know, certain psychological terms, like I said, the death drive, the life drive, and all that. It's very interesting to see how these ancient concepts have been built upon and are reintegrated, so to speak.
Right. Right. And it's actually really interesting to see how it's all being reintegrated with more of an LHP look on it. I mean, I get what you're doing here, and that you're begging and borrowing the things that will seem like great ideas within the context of it, and kind of putting it together in almost like a musical composure. So
absolutely, absolutely, and there's that aspect.
Right, which we didn't even really get to touch on that much, because I was curious if there's a major scale, minor scale association. I wondered how arpeggio scales might play into it.
Well, within the realm of music, what really needs to be focused upon is the focus on tension and release within Dionysianism. And that could be utilizing any scale one wants to. Because within this Dionysian path, the tension and release, like I said, it corresponds to and is related to what we would see as adversarial conflict. But this is what's interesting about what I'm synthesizing within this path is, is that adversarial conflict really just adversarial conflict, or is it, could it be something else, something deeper than what it appears to be?
Sure, I think there's got to be an kind of an underlying implication of that anyway.
Right.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that you're not pointing to it. I'm just saying that it's kind of, I think, implied.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. One of the examples I'm drawing upon, forgive me, I don't have the exact eighth year, but Libra 418, The Vision and the Voice, Aleister Crowley wrote something very interesting about seeing the cosmos making love to one another, you know, and there's tension and release within sex. And that is one of the examples I'm bringing about. Like, for example, tension and resolution yielding results. Could it be related to something more sexual? Could it be related to libido? There's not going to be a for sure answer, but that's definitely a concept that I'm exploring and integrating within the book.
Interesting. I was really kind of hoping for more development beyond the tension and release. I mean, not that I don't understand the importance of that in music, because I do. That's, I mean, it's the single one thing that'll make or break any piece of music is the tension and release. As a matter of fact, I recently, I'm not sure if I was talking to somebody or I saw something on it or read something on it, but there was some discussion about Anton LaVey and him playing the, now I'm thinking about it. Wasn't it Nagashiva's
Yeah, it was,
wife?
Was it Catherine?
Yeah, Catherine, right. Yeah.
Yeah, she brought that up, and she made a very excellent point on that show, and I would refer people back to that show because it was an excellent show.
I absolutely thought so, too. I mean, that was one of the reasons why, in the future, I'd like to get back into the correlation between the music and quote unquote devilry, because I think that there's definitely a major connection that goes on there. I mean, if you think about, and I just want to say this real quick, because we've got like 2 minutes left. But if you think about, you know, when rock and roll came along, it was associated with the, with evil properties. And you know, the same happened when heavy metal was born and so forth and so on. And it just seems like there's always this direct aspect that, and I think that was kind of the overarching point Michael Joaquin was making when he proposed it in the first place, correct?
Absolutely, yeah.
So anyway, with that being said and done, we got about 2 minutes left in the show, man. I wanted to say thank you very much. You know, you gave us a great show. I didn't really have a lot of wonderful questions, but it wasn't a pause really throughout the whole show except for Zach's toilet break. you really did a good job. Super.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me, and hopefully I'd like to see where this co-hosting goes. I'm very excited, we'll keep in touch, yeah?
Absolutely. I mean, you'll need to be there tomorrow morning for sure. I believe Jason King's already given up the reins. At least that was my understanding at the end of our phone call today. So
that's right.
That means. And now also, while I'm thinking about this, tomorrow we're going to be talking with, and God, I got to find out what this chick's real name is so that I'm not referring to her as, orgasmic, chromatic, or whatever the hell it is. It makes me nuts. The two words don't seem to go together, and that drives a little bit of the OCD in me crazy.
Ah, okay, I gotcha.
Yeah, the words they both end with that ick, and that really bothers me. That makes me nuts. Lexi, there we go, Lexi. My girlfriend actually teases the hell out of me about things like that, because stuff really just gets me crazy. If it's done in a way that I don't think it should be done, it makes me nuts. I will literally, like, have to totally restrain myself from grabbing your hands and going, no, you fucking idiot, do it this way.
Oh, man.
I mean, that's something that people don't know about me, but that's just case in point. So, anyway, with 10 seconds left in the show, we'll talk to everybody tomorrow.
All right, everyone. We'll see you then.
See you then.